So I'm going to be following up on Yul's excellent overview of some of the principles and potential benefits of federation to go into some detail both about the reasons and the actual means by which we've been developing a federated architecture for pathology and laboratory test resulting at MD Anderson. And to do that, first of all, I want to thank Bruce and Yul for giving me the opportunity to do that. And I want to go back to the original root cause, which developed me to kind of go in this direction when I came to MD Anderson, and that was the ensuring the reasonable and accurate representation of pathology reports in our EMR. When I came to MD Anderson, we had a very traditional workflow in terms of a kind of non-federated architecture for pathology reporting, which is that a pathologist would sit in our system and create a native pathology report in Microsoft Word within the context of the pathology LIS system that we use, which is PowerPath. And that information then would be extracted by the application through an HL7 interface feed, be forwarded on to an HL7 interface engine, which had the capability of distributing that HL7 message to multiple downstream systems. For the EMR system, it went into a database in the EMR, which was then reconstituted in the hospital information system to provide a custom display of that information for the clinician. In that process, the role of HL7 has the benefit of being a common denominator in which data elements are well defined in terms of elements of a lab or pathology report. However, a recurring issue with this is the transmission of complex data, which you can certainly embed in a Microsoft Word report, whether it be tabular, images, formatting, text, etc., to HL7, which is a text-based standard, requires transformation, and that is parsing of that Microsoft Word document into ASCII or unformatted text. So the end result being that the report, as is seen by a pathologist within PowerPath, which is formatted here, has certain line breaks and potentially has the ability to contain other important formatting information, goes into an HL7 message, which clearly is going to involve a loss of virtually all of that formatting information. I'm not going to show you the end result, but some of the things that we saw were differential line breaks between the report and what was seen in the EMR in cases where that could actually be clinically significant in terms of line breaks at important words like no, things like that. So the bottom line is that the integrity of semantic content is always at stake or at risk in any transformation process. In addition to the integrity of the semantic content, the push model of delivering information into an EMR generally means multiple copies, not only in the EMR, but also in any consumer who wants to display pathology or laboratory information in their own system, whether that be an ambulatory surgery system or the pharmacy system for having creatinine values, things like this. So, the question is, why shouldn't everybody have their own copy of the data? And I think you already mentioned some of these things, and they're fairly obvious. Within the HL7 model, one major reason is the simple complexity of the message model and processing itself. It's a significant effort to actually implement and institute an HL7 interface because of not only the data model, but also the fact that the push system involves initial statuses of tests, the resulted status of tests, and may include things like revise or revisions or updates to tests. So there's an actual temporal model of message processing. Not only does the system have to be able to capable of parsing those HL7 messages, they also have to appropriately update their own internal data model in reflection of multiple messages that are received over time. The maintenance and stewardship of the data, including compliance issues, we are, as people involved in the delivery of pathology and laboratory data, directly involved in maintaining CLIA compliance for our laboratories. One of the components of that is ensuring the appropriate display of downstream data in systems that consume our data. And the general issue of multiple potential conflicting sources of the truth as a result of this. And I think that federation offers a potential mechanism of addressing some persistent challenges, which I think that, and I've deleted one of my slides here, but there are several persistent challenges. One is, what we talked about already, is the appropriate display of information. And the second, which I alluded to, is developing easier ways to distribute information that don't provide such a high activation area or barrier to creating connections to downstream systems. And then a final persistent challenge I think Federation has an opportunity to address is the issue of assuring adequate input from and resource allotment to pathology and laboratory informatics initiatives. And you know, basically that's related to the fact that if the responsibility of the lab ends at the point of simply getting an outbound interface feed going out to the world, that I think the danger is there, first of all, having mandates such as the CLIA mandate to ensure the validation and the appropriate display of information from our systems in things like the EMR without necessarily having institutional or facility resources to actually support those mandates and the human tech time that's required to actually do that. So, you know, a couple of the big EMR models include the EMR, which is capable of interfacing with multiple different upstream systems through HL7 messages, and that's kind of the push model, as I mentioned, that we had started with. There's an EMR single solution, which basically hides the fact that, you know, a vendor can provide an EMR with multiple modules that interoperate without the upstream systems having to be communicating in a way that the institution that's implementing necessarily has to have a lot of it knowledge about it. Of course, there are internal connections between these systems, and these may even use non-HL7-based mechanisms. But the bottom line is that the logic and display and the control still resides within the EMR, and that the mechanisms for getting information out of these different modules may be internally done but not externally documented or easy to access from the outside world. And then I think the alternative that you know you all and I are discussing, and that has certainly been something that people have provided other exemplars of, is the pathology lab systems as virtual databases in a federated model where the EMR actually has a two-way connection of querying the pathology or laboratory upstream systems dynamically rather than storing a copy of the data itself. And so the EMR contains application and connection logic, and hopefully these information is delivered over web-based standards, but either way, whether over standards or simply database connections, the upstream systems maintain the prima facie copy of the data. So some principles in data federation are has been previously mentioned, the fact that you can come closer to having a single source of truth, and that the risk of transforming data through multiple different stages is potentially alleviated by doing that. That, as we talked about, mechanistically, you would do a just-in-time query of primary systems. And one of the benefits of this is that it really, if set up correctly, allows the data consumer, a person who wants to connect to that system, to be the driving force in creating connections. So the limiting and the requirements for that are, first of all, that you have well-defined data standards for your data and you make it available over well-defined connectivity options. And if you do that, I think the it's kind of like if you build it, they will come. The driving force to actually implement that, a lot of the technical information to do that can be described once the impetus is on the consumer where it generally resides and doesn't require as much input from the upstream data source once established. You can also think of federation as happening on an application level, and that is, how can we facilitate vendors or EMR systems showing our data in their system even if they don't use a data connection mechanism? In other words, how can we provide a control, let's say, a user control or a Java-based window in which the information from the pathology or lab system can be visualized or placed into an EMR or a small, lightweight application with minimal effort by the people or the developers who are actually creating that. And that's the idea of kind of EMR white space. So our initial approach for pathology actually took this route, which is that we wanted to make sure that we were displaying pathology reports correctly, and so we actually did develop a user control that was capable of trivially being embedded in any Windows application. And then upon request for a particular pathology report, basically that control would take care of going back to the source database, which is our PowerPath database, extracting the report text, which is stored in something called rich text format, or RTF, which is the format that Microsoft was actually, Word was actually using to edit the documents, would extract that out and display it directly in a control that's capable of rendering RTF. And as a result, the appearance in the EMR is going to be identical to what we, the pathologist was seeing when they signed out the case. We gave that to our EMR team for embedding. And so that changes the system for federated delivery. You basically cut out several of the intervening steps. The HIS viewer is now using a custom report control that queries to the database directly instead of it being transformed over HL7. And so the appearance is the same for the pathologist and the clinician. I'm actually going to try to give you guys a real-world example of doing this by building an EMR. We're going to do a very simple EMR, given our time constraints. We're actually going to start with just a blank form, and this has only been initialized. This is a, happens to be Visual Studio as a development environment, but this could be done in any Windows environment. We've set a reference to this pathology component, which I mentioned that we in pathology had developed, and we basically just have a blank form here. So our EMR is going to be very simple. It just right now is a blank form. We're going to give it a way to query the pathology system for the pathology cases for a particular patient by typing an MRN, medical record number, and then we'll be able to display those reports. So, as I said, we're starting with a blank form here, so we'll add some logic to give ourselves the ability to query a particular patient by putting in a command button and a text box, which lets us put in an MRN. And then the other component that we're going to do is we're going to add in this control that we developed at MD Anderson to actually display pathology information for this patient. We're just going to put that on the form. Obviously, in a real EMR, you'd have a more complex system for displaying results from different types of systems. We'll anchor this so that it scales with the form. And basically what we're going to do is we're going to say, when we click this button, we're going to query the system for this particular medical record number that's been placed in that text box. So we've embedded a control, and so it's this is that control right there, and it has a public method, which is to load a patient. We're going to tell it to load the medical record number of the patients that we placed in the text box, which is going to be a text box text. And we're going to tell it a fake user ID in this case. The only other thing we need to do is to tell our system some connection information about what system upstream will be connecting to. We can do that at the initialization of the form here. So we have a general procedure to initialize the server connection by telling it what server to talk to. And obviously we're only going to look at a test patient here, but this is actually going to connect to our production PowerPath database. So I've basically told it to connect to this database server at this location with a service account. Okay, if I now run this application, I'll type in the medical record number of the test patient in our system. And basically all of the logic at this point is being handled by this embedded control. That's a little bit slow because of the VPN connection. But in terms of displaying both a list of pathology cases for this patient, in terms of the accession number, when it's collected, received, the case type, as well as the actual report. And this is an example, again, from our PowerPath, not a real case, but one where we've embedded an image. All of the formatting of the text comes along for the ride. Since we've embedded RTF directly, anything that you're capable of rendering in RTF in Microsoft Word is then going to go directly into the EMR. And this is, from our perspective, a very lightweight solution. There's a fair amount of logic on the upstream end in developing the control, but having developed the control, it's possible to give that to anybody with this simple example of application, embedding this is really quite trivial for an EMR or for somebody who wants to create a system to see pathology reports. There are alternative approaches to this type of thing. Some people have used PDF. One of the reasons we like RTF is because it's what's actually used by our native system, and because it allows you, our clinicians basically insist on the ability to copy and paste, and this gives you the ability to copy and paste. Not that I necessarily recommend that as a means of exchanging medical information, but in reality, it's the way that, you know, at MD Anderson, as referring physicians, will send back copies of our pathology reports over email to the people that had referred patients to them. So that's been our initial approach to federation, which was directed at correct display of the pathology report in our EMR by providing a lightweight control that's capable of going back to the primary source system. By doing this, we've gotten rid of the EMR having its own copy of the pathology database that's based on HL7 messages, and we've also created a tool where we can, if necessary, change the appearance or the display logic for the reports themselves. And first and foremost, the driving force, which is what you see is what you get. What the pathologist sees when they sign out the report is what is seen by the clinicians when they see the report in the EMR. So there were some issues with our initial federation model that represented kind of an initial approach to the idea of federation. It really was using direct database connectivity, or ODBC, as opposed to a more open exchange model. From a technical perspective, the RTF that's actually stored in the database is actually stored in a compressed format, and so this control itself didn't give us an easy way to make that text or that list of cases available to systems that didn't have that decompression logic. All of that logic is built into that control, but if they wanted to display or gather that information some other way, there's no easy way to do that. So it was, looser coupling of information and data from the perspective of information and data exchange. That represented a looser coupling because we didn't, require the EMR to keep its own copy of the data. But at the same time, we also had a situation now where if there's downtime of the pathology system, that would actually impact on the EMR display. Turned out that wasn't a major consideration. We had less downtime in our pathology system than the EMR did, so the bar was set relatively low there. But we did subsequently, we've elaborated that architecture to actually use something called transactional replication which is a very lightweight way of making multiple identical database copies, so that we actually had have queries now going against a copy of our pathology database, but it's not a copy that's created by HL7. It's a copy that's created by simple built-in database mechanisms to make an identical copy of the database. So, briefly, I want to go into our follow-up approach, which was to look at it not just from an application federation perspective, but also from creating standards or creating a way of federating data across our entire system. The follow-up to this was a project at MD Anderson that we called SPIDER, Shared Pathology Data Repository, which basically we provided and sold to the institution as a middleware service for querying of pathology and laboratory data, that it would give us a way to take multiple upstream data providers, which included our Cerner Classic LIS system and the pathology system and some other legacy systems that we had where there were static copies of lab data from going back to the 1970s, actually. But to take those and provide a uniform downstream implementation for data consumers where they could access a single set of web services to actually get data across this multiple set of upstream data sources. Talk a little bit about the service-oriented architecture. Basically, it's a perspective of software architecture that defines the use of services to support the requirements of software users. And in a services-oriented architecture, resources like lab data are made available as independent services that can be accessed without underlying knowledge or detailed knowledge, the details of the data model or the underlying platform implementation. Some of the key features of the service-oriented, one expression of which is over something called web services, is that the schema, that is the definition of the data model and the documentation of that data model, is intrinsic to and part of the actual service definition. So there is a standard set of standards that are related to federation over services-oriented architecture on the web, one of which is called something called Web Services Description Language, which provides a way of encapsulating information about what services are available at a particular endpoint. So services are acquiring pathology data or acquiring laboratory data. What the parameters to those calls are in terms of what information has to be supplied, a medical record number, date range, things like that, as well as details about the data that's returned and the data model that's returned. And basically, putting our lab information from a unified database into this web services languages allowed us to create a set of services using WSDL that can be fairly easily consumed by downstream systems to automatically generate code at data consumers to actually consume those services and to basically acquire our data model on the fly. So given that we want to talk a little bit about some proposed ways of leveraging this conference to actually develop some interoperability standards, I think I'll go and just give you guys a little bit of demonstration of the actual SPIDR website as it currently exists, because I think it helps to see some real-world examples of this. So this is, again, I'm connected through a VPN to the MD Anderson network here. And this is the SPIDR service, which is basically, there's a web page representation that is based on parsing through a web template of this WSDL or web service description language that I mentioned. So what you see here are the different service calls that are available for this system, the parameters that are needed, and then it will tell you what also is returned. You can browse the schemas, which are XML normative documents which define what an XML document that actually returns data along this mechanism will actually look like. And so the key information for lab data in terms of the clinical lab is this lab data schema. This is an XML document which is basically self-describing and describes the data model for how data will come back out of the system. An example, because this is based on a W3 or World Wide Web Consortium standard, there are excellent tools for parsing this, for generating these schemas. This is an automatically generated documentation file from an application called XML Spy in response to parsing this schema, basically, and saying that we have, for lab data, we have basically a model where we're going to return a set of tests which include information at the level of the order, the subject of the test, the status of the test, et cetera. And then we'll also return a nested hierarchy of lab details which correspond to the actual granular reportable elements. Where did that go? So test details would include the actual result value, the units of the results, the reference range, whether something's abnormal, et cetera, things like that. So what this actually looks like, if you can invoke this web service, there's not that much point to doing it this way, but you can invoke the web service directly over the web just to see an example of what the data comes back from the system as. So we can do... test patient again. So if we invoke this over the web, we get back something that is basically an XML document. It conforms to the schema for lab data that we had developed, and as such, can be parsed by any programming environment that's capable of taking a schema and from that generating a set of programming objects that correspond to that data model. So you can see XML is sort of human readable. We see a list of elements that are delimited by angled brackets, closed off by forward slashes. And here's an example of a microbiology test, which includes information about, at the test level, about what test was ordered, the patient, et cetera, and then includes the detailed results for that test. And the end result of that, and I don't really have time to give a full demonstration like I did for the mini EMR, but the bottom line is, having described our lab data in this web services architecture, we can then very simply, actually, and this is an example using basically three lines of code in another .NET project. After we set what's called setting a reference to that web service, that is, it tells the programming environment to go out, look at that schema, look at that WSDL language, find out what service calls are available, find out what the data model is of the data that's going to come back. Having done that, we can basically, the three lines of code are, one is to instantiate an example of that service, which basically hooks up to a computer-generated proxy to actually use those methods and return that data, to define an object of the lab data, which is populated through a get lab data call, and then to basically bind that data to a hierarchical grid that we've placed on the form. What that ends up looking like, in those three lines of code, we get basically, you know, a mini representation of, you know, all of these data elements that link together in a grid that actually is capable of displaying hierarchical relationships between the elements, say, of a CVC and the original order for a CVC. So that's, I think, hopefully an overview of the power potential of federation. The take-home messages that I want to just emphasize is that, from my perspective, the increasing complexity of pathology data demands at least representational integrity, and that is, you know, what you see is what you get. And really, HL7 ASCII-based delivery through a push model is grossly inadequate in its ability to support that. From my personally biased perspective, pathology informaticians are well-situated as technically aware domain experts to assume responsibility for the timely, accurate, and comprehensible delivery of pathology data. And that a federated repository model where pathology data is queried on demand from a pathology-managed resource offers the possibility of harmonizing both institutional requirements, IT resources, and data expertise. And then, Yul, if I can get you to hook back up, we're going to talk a little bit about a proposal to leverage Laboratory Infotech to take some of these concepts of federation and actually develop interoperability standards and real-world interchange examples.
So as both Mark and I mentioned, our hope is to vet with the group at large the notion of what we're calling LITS Interop, which is really what I think, and also Mark thinks, is an ideal opportunity to serve as a host and convener of a project that will demonstrate true standards-based interoperability for a set of selected exemplars, both AP and CP. And I think the key to success here is keeping the expectations realistic, keeping the scope of the project realistic in the technical level, although at a level which would make it useful for deployment in the real world, constrained enough that is makes it within the realm of possibility between now and a similar time next year. And, you know, obviously they say the imitation is the best compliment. DICOM and the radiology community has done this about 20 years ago now with their connectathons at the annual RSNA meetings, demonstrating not the first or second, but finally the third version of DICOM to be interoperable. It actually took three versions, so there's no loss in trying. And with that notion, we have a lot of opportunity to see how that was carried out and carry out a similar type of activity. The clinical pathology exemplar is very similar to what radiology did. In essence, the radiologists themselves personally became studies where their badge was barcoded, and they were able to go to various vendor displays and have themselves accessioned or entered as a study. We would offer the same notion of having registrants being able to have themselves as barcoded specimens go to any participating group, whether it be a vendor or an academic site that's participating, or a community-based hospital, in fact, and have themselves accessioned with a test then
being ordered, and then results are available on the web services grid for dissemination to any other participant on that network. So then individuals could go to the various other booths, tables, and retrieve their results. This would be carried out via service-oriented architecture protocol that has utility in showing operation of number of service layers, the order the order SOA, the results, the central name server, and we'll go through a diagram that describes that, and then possibly other service-oriented architecture that supports a fully enabled grid. And the deliverables would be from Lab Infotech Summit, the overall XML schema that would facilitate a unified set of messages. So we would define that working with the participant group and then make that available to everybody who would subsequently join the group. A white paper would accompany this, as well as the XML templates and the SLTS template style sheets to allow for simplified transformation of the data. This would also have as a packet for dissemination, a CD-ROM, electronic paper, electronic to electronic reconstitution capabilities, and then finally overall federation. And the demonstrations that would be part of this would be going outgoing materials and ingoing orders, similar to anatomic pathology. Anatomic pathology, I'll let Mark describe this.
So the use case that we had thought about for this was the exchange of pathology materials between facilities, which happens regularly as a result of the need for either consultation or a second opinion driven by a patient request or transfer of a patient from one institution to another for a secondary opinion. And, you know, in those cases, basically, we use the FedEx model. It's universally used, which means one institution packages up the materials, maybe a printout of the pathology reports, the materials being slides and or blocks from a pathology case, and FedExes them. And the incoming institution takes those paper documents out, reads them, figures out, well, does this patient have a medical record number at my institution? Do I need one? Once I've got one, I want to accession this material into my own system, and, you know, then maybe I want to send around these paper copies of the reports so that somebody can see them. So the idea there being that I think there's tremendous opportunity here to make that process while still supporting the fact that there are going to be paper-driven processes when you transfer in physical materials from one place to another, to make that process much more automated and much more reliable. So the deliverables for this would be, again, development of an XML schema to encapsulate both the materials and the diagnostic data that would be have to be transferred from one institution or facility to another to actually transfer those slides and blocks and the pathology reports. A white paper describing the uses and best practices. Again, an XSLT template, a style sheet to actually allow the XML data standard to be transformed and printed to a human-readable format that has a reasonable appearance. And then some examples of different transfer strategies. You could transfer a CD-ROM, for instance, send it along with the case materials and the paperwork, or to support a electronic-to-paper, back-to-electronic, which I call a reconstitution strategy, where an upstream system is capable of printing not only a human-readable format of this information, but also a machine-readable format through a series of complex two-dimensional barcodes, which include, a compressed representation of that XML schema. And potentially, ideally, also a federation where, you know, all that's sent between institutions is the physical materials and a identifier to get back to the originating location in terms of what the information is available. The ideal thing about that is that the downstream system, the system that's intaking the information, only has to query all the information that it wants to from that upstream system, but it only has to use the parts that actually are needed for that system. So the demos for this would potentially include the generation of the outgoing materials and the automatic ordering of an annotation of incoming cases. So those are the areas that we had thought about.
And a key aspect of the architecture of the set of demonstrations is actually to build a working prototype that in turn could be A, extended, and then B, actually used by that critical mass of initial adopters and hopefully an expanding universe of additional adopters who would be able then to
to advertise the fact that they were compliant with this open source, not just standard, but set of conventions for interchange of materials. And perhaps it's a bold thing for a medium, small-sized annual meeting to attempt to the role of the convener for such activity, but quite frankly, there's a paucity of activities right now in this respect. And one thing that Lab InfoTech Summit would bring to the table, of course, is the opportunity working very closely with the one singular standards group that's interested in pathology informatics, which is Association for Pathology Informatics. And the president is standing right next to me, and I can ask him if he's interested in this, but I already know the answer. The answer is yes, because the API has a long history of trying to foster and promulgate useful standards for the profession. I think it really is kind of a perfect confluence of technologies and requirements and needs to attempt this. This was sort of attempted for imaging specifically by API 2 and 3 years ago. It fizzled, and it probably fizzled because it was a little bit before its time. I think, though, from the perspective of taking the AP exemplar, interchange of consultation cases, whether or not you have associated with them the whole slide imagery, which, of course, we would find a way to incorporate when that becomes available. By a show of hands, how many in the audience would find it useful to have a unified, true interoperability standard for sharing AP consult information? Who would think that's not valuable? Okay. And for CP as well, the ability to very, in easy terms, create a lightweight exchange between your reference lab and your local lab. Is that value added? Any further comments, Margaret? And I think I'll turn it to the audience for comments or critiques and how we can make this better. Yeah, Bruce.
I just wanted to point out that basically you're going up against some of the most powerful interests in healthcare IT. That is, first of all, the HL7 group, and then, of course, all the EMR vendors who we're asking to change, and then finally all the CIOs and CEOs who have invested hundreds of millions of dollars in their systems. So what you're saying to the EMR vendors is you may not be able to get $100 million purchase price for white space, and in terms of the HL7 vendors or the groups, essentially you're largely saying they're obsolete. So I'm just agreeing with what you're saying, which is you need to mature these products in a protected environment until they're a little bit more robust, at which point you're able to go more public. And when you have a working model, then you'll be it'll be impossible to ignore what you're doing. So it's a perfect strategy.
Thank you, Bruce. Along those lines, in terms of incubating a critical environment. Oh.
Chair for the pathology SIG at HL7. I mean, this is not all that far away from the HL7 version 3 model. So I don't think it's quite as bad as you might think it is. I can't, I'm kind of it's embarrassing here.
Step up, you can come use this one.
Okay, I'll go. This is not a whole lot different than the HL7 version 3 models we talked about. So if we do this right and keep in touch with HL7, I don't think it's quite as bad as you think it is. It can be done.
The intent here is not to buck the system. John last year gave a very elegant presentation, and this year as well with the roadmap. Standards from HL7 provide significant value, but because of the inertia associated with the larger community, that has to also have harmonization. Doing this via HL7 is years off. I think if we do this in XML on the service architecture, we're not fighting HL7. This is lightweight, and it's XML, which means it can be harmonized downstream with the 3.x RIM model when that becomes available. But I'll come back to this model very briefly. We already have, from discussing this concept with a number of participants at this year's Lab InfoTech Summit, And I suspect when I mention others, there are other individuals, other vendors, other groups in the audience that now that you're aware of this would similarly want to participate. And the notion of participation is truly egalitarian. It's not at all to create a competitive edge, but on the contrary, to create an open source, openly and collaboratively built exchange layer that really adds value. So if we've misstated what the real needs of the exemplar are for the AP or CP, we'll tune that. We'll fix that in the process of the discovery and of building the infrastructure layers that will enable such exchange. But I think we have a critical mass of interest, both from the professional organization, from API, as well as a number of academic sites and vendor participants, that I'm encouraged that this, in fact, will be possible for this coming year. Very, very briefly, looking at it structurally, what we envision doing, and Mark, please comment on the AP aspects of this architecture, the ABCDE notion, of course, is the plurality of various vendors, individual academic community-based hospitals, or even single practices that want to participate on the federation. As an added twist for CP, besides orders and results, is the opportunity to throw in a higher level of complexity. These two sources of information perhaps are a stretch goal, but something that's not currently present in most hospital information systems that's needed. And that is a source for a namespace repository, which is on the federated architecture, so that, for example, as new tests become available, they're placed into the namespace. And then as a test message would exchange across the service architecture bus, it would have a version number. And as any participant on this bus were looking at that version number and said, oh, this is a test I don't recognize, and more so its version number is newer than the version number we've all agreed to, which would in turn trigger it to go to the namespace server to get the latest version of the test. So now you've basically distributed the ability to maintain the consistency and currency of the various data elements across the enterprise. And that is a missing aspect of modern architectures within most enterprise settings. Similarly, notion of rules, ARDEN syntax, or other types of Boolean predicates for search, for harmonization of complex data sets, these typically live at the interface level for validation within the lab or at the hospital information system level for decision support. The notion of having a rule space server, again as a stretch goal, allows for harmonization of complex rules that span the different domains or sub-participants of a service-oriented architecture bus. We may not be able to do this by 2009, but this gives you an idea of the type of extensibility we're trying to add to this architecture, which really provides kind of a global solution to things that are currently difficult to do. And so something as mundane as a new test with a new name. This is difficult now. Right now you have to pre and post coordinate it. This type of architecture with a namespace simplifies that. So we're looking then to build a working prototype in the setting of an actual live network within the exhibit floor next year. And I'll take comments from the audience.
Okay. I had a couple of questions. First, I mean, I'm massively in favor of federation, and even in its predecessors in terms of normalization of databases and single source of truth, though that's a little unfortunate name for the term. I mean, we know what we mean by it in terms of single data element provision, but in an environment of second and third opinions and multiple lab tests, there are very often multiple sources of truth that need to be part of our data models. But the first question was around performance in relation to federation. And so federation has been around for a little while, and some of the initial implementations of it have had performance issues, and these vary as to whether you're talking about on the intranet, but I think we also need to be thinking about federation over the internet as well. And in the interests of risk-based application development methodologies like unified process and so on, it's a good idea to address these kinds of risks up front. And I wonder whether the notion of maintaining logical federation, whether you've given any thought to looking at the physical implementation of logical federation, which may actually end up including multiple copies of the same data, but strictly managed in a way that the logical concept of single source of truth is maintained. The vision that I have for this is that we should be able to set things up in the way that you illustrate, but if we find that performance is an issue, we can flick a switch and instantly implement these things as physical caches. If cache kind of suggests a simplification to it, which I think is unfair, because essentially these caches are going to be like what we spend much time in putting together data marts and data warehouses. And the second point or question was in relation to the semantic issue, and inevitably with the payloads that we're going to be putting over service-oriented architectures, and I think it was evident in Mark's examples, it's a classic problem in the domain space that we're dealing with, is that we have to include metadata within our systems. And that was evident, for example, in the services that you were showing for lab tests. We're passing around information like the value type, like numeric. And I'm interested in your views about the capability of the service description languages, et cetera, to handle that issue and take them out of our payload, and whether we can, to the extent to which we can address these semantic issues as part of the service-oriented architecture.
Okay, very, very good questions, long compound questions. So I think the first question, very briefly, conceptually, it raises the point that the semantic concept of data structure can be separated from the physical underpinnings of how you've optimized multiple server performance. So you can virtualize a single source of truth into perhaps a complex hardware instantiation that may in fact denormalize the model, but not from a true referential integrity perspective. Those are really beyond the scope of what we're trying to represent here from a conceptual perspective. Also, the notion of performance, though, can be mitigated by having all participant nodes of an architecture being at a similarly high level of enterprise capability. And I'd like Mark to comment on that, because he really has done this at MD Anderson, because by creating the white space propagation issue by use of federation, that means then that the pathology components of the federation are elevated to the level of expectation of the enterprise at large for performance.
Yeah, I think that's the point, is that in a federated architecture where you query against multiple primary data sources, those data sources have to be prepared for the transactional load that's going to be placed on them from a highly utilized EMR. Of course, from an architectural perspective, in terms of implementing that, the way you should implement those systems is that they're capable of running multiple asynchronous queries that don't wait for all of the data from all the different systems to return before you start deploying that information. But you're always going to be dependent on the performance of the slowest system in your federated network for that last piece of information. And so it's certainly an important part of the architecture to either make sure that those upstream systems are capable, or to bring them up to speed in terms of being able of supporting transactional queries.
And just very briefly to answer your second question, in terms of complex payloads and evolving data types, the namespace server concept, which could have a referential serializer version number, could address that in principle. And as a result of, as new payloads are identified, that can be populated to the namespace, which is then immediately available to the federation. So that if any member of a federation encounters a message with a data type that is not previously encountered, it can seek that from the namespace server. And that's exactly why we put these added layers of granularity in the overall federation, besides what was the prior model of just participant nodes. I think there need to be additional members of a federation which service the overall bus in terms of the knowledge domain within that federation.